I'd like to talk about this passage from Isaiah. We heard a lot of Isaiah all through Advent, of course, a sword into plowshares and lions lying down with lambs, those glorious visions. And here, too, is something very important being said. And we should note, first of all, again, what is prophecy? Prophecy in the Hebrew Bible. The Greek word is prophetes, which just means spokesperson. So if you go back to the book of Exodus, Aaron, Moses' brother, was Moses' spokesperson before Pharaoh, because Moses apparently had a speech defect, or, well, we don't know what's going on, but in any case, that's what he was called. So it's not a predictive function. Rather, the prophet sees himself, believes himself to be able to see the world the way God sees the world, and then speaks out of that vision. Okay, and this passage here is important because it's Isaiah, Jeremiah, none of the classic prophets saw themselves as kind of religious virtuosi, you know. But here I am, you know, standing over everybody else. There's a lovely line from Isaiah, I'm a man of unclean lips and dwell among a people of unclean lips. In other words, they fully identify with the Jews whom they complained about, or so they saw God complaining about regularly. And it's in this context that we have to hear, I think, these last two lines. I will give you the light to the nations, and my salvation will reach to the ends of the earth. So Isaiah believed that God was not just addressing him personally as an individual, but the whole nation of Israel. That's what Israel was supposed to do in the world. I mean, the church I grew up in didn't have much of that at all. We were, you know, the privileged people, and we were the Salvation Club, and everybody else was an extern and in danger of going to hell in a handbasket. And we can thank Francis I for many things, but we can also thank him for the fact that he complained bitterly about what he calls the church as being self-referential. The church is being self-serving. The church is being introspective rather than open to the world, available to the world. The nastiest manifestation, of course, of that is clericalism. Where we in the church were brought up, and certainly I was taught in the seminary, to see the clerical status as some kind of great privilege, you know, which set you apart from everybody else. Well, that's total rubbish. The church is supposed to be the only institution on the face of the earth that did not exist for its own sake, for its own benefit. But the church is essentially, to use the classic biblical term, mission. The church is to be sent to the world. And that's the sole reason for its existence. And only when it does see itself as mission is it in any way authentic. So what, if we can go back to the biblical stuff to say, what kind of role is that? Well, it seems to me pretty clear it's the prophetic role. The church is supposed to be a prophetic presence in the world. Seeing the world, in other words, as God sees it, for the sake of the world. Always for the sake of the world, not for its own sake. Pache, all kinds of people who don't see things this way because they see it wrongly. Simply, they don't see it the way it's supposed to be. So what does a prophet feel like? Well, I really recommend that you, if you don't know the prophetic literature, Isaiah's great, Jeremiah's great, Amos, Hosea, the whole crowd of the 12 little prophets and the 4 big ones. It's wonderful literature. Often enough, it is literature of a very high quality, as it is in Isaiah as well. But the prophet essentially saw themselves as standing outside the mainstream of culture. Why? Because there are all kinds of things in the culture which are radically opposed to what God wanted us to be. You You know, we have mislocated, I think, that kind of critical stance in all kinds of ways. We can thank Francis one that we don't harp endlessly on contraception and abortion and homosexuality and all those pelvic issues, you know, which really do continue to characterize us. I mean, when you see on the news broadcast, and the church says, where you can be bloody well certain it means about three bishops got together in a closet and issued some kind of edict. You know? That's not what it's supposed to be about. The church is supposed to be a voice in the world saying that the world is not what it's supposed to be. But that's still safely abstract and general. What does that come down to in terms of particulars? Well, there are a bunch of ways of getting to that, I think. Television, that omnipresent cyclopean presence in our living rooms, you know, is a good place to begin. I mean, I don't think I am jaded. In fact, years and years ago, I think it was under Reagan, Newton Minow, a cabinet minister, looked at television and said, described it in a wonderful phrase as the vast wasteland. And the wasteland hasn't become more fertile, except it's producing more waste, it seems to me, today than it has. All you have to do is look at ads, for God's sake. Ads which tell us you are somehow an inferior human being until you fill in the blanks. There's not an ad on TV that does not offer that as a world vision, as a vehicle for self-definition. You know, but it's not that. If you just look at the programs, car crashes, aliens, demonic possession, you know, gangsterism, and we seem to thrive on that. It is uncanny to me how we can sit in our comfortable living rooms and see all these people shooting each other and feel some deep sense of satisfaction somehow. You know, the bad guys are getting there and the good guys are doing it to them. Well, that's also rubbish. And then the most offensive aspect of this altogether is what we call reality TV. And if you want to know what unreality TV, watch one of those vile programs where people are out to cutthroat each other, to betray each other, to compete with each other, to undermine each other. And that's supposed to be reality. And I think that does inform to a large extent. All we have to do is look at the predatory practices of Wall Street money fund manager. If that's not predatory, I don't know what is. In other words, one helpful way of trying to get at this marginality, this place where the prophet's supposed to stand looking at the world, is to ask ourselves, what is really powerful in my life? What conveys power to me? Where do I think power is located? The images of the advertisers, you know, is a great place to start with that. The criticism of the triviality, superficiality, sentimentality of much of television is addressed by that as well. But I really think that stuff has power over us. We're immersed in it. We're marinated in it. You know, you can't get away from it. And even those few people who don't watch television, whom I deeply admire, no, cannot escape the clutches of this definition of how the world is supposed to go. The world is in the hands of the powerful, and for powerful, read the moneyed class. And we all believe that. We all believe that. Maybe this is too personal, but I'm always kind of struck by talking to people. Oh, my son just got a new job with this big corporation. He's now a major executive. He's having a good life. He's a success. And we take that for granted. My daughter, the lawyer. My nephew's in medical school. They're all going to be successful. They're all going to be able to live good lives. And I believe that's as deeply embedded in our consciousness as anything. And seriously skews our vision of the world. Because power understood in that way is essentially connected with the great, great vice that comes up over and over in the Bible of oppression. Injustice. Somebody is suffering because heads of corporation are paid $10 million, $11 million a year for doing what? Often enough for purveying and encouraging us to buy into a vision of the world that is basically dehumanizing and fundamentally alienating. But I could stand here and say this to myself, and I hear myself saying it, but that doesn't do it until I sit down concretely and look at a specific situation and say, okay, Trojan, what has power out of this scenario? Huh? Where are you attached? Where does this grab you? And I'm embarrassed to say that most of the time, I'm frankly jealous of those parents who could say, oh, my son the lawyer, my daughter the doctor. Because my three sons are all in big trouble. They're failures. None of them has any money. Which is the truth, which is the literal truth. So what I'm trying to do today is to encourage myself to become more sensitive to the way the world really works and to what really does have power over me. There's a wonderful book by a great Brazilian pedagogue named Paulo Freire, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. I don't know whether anybody's read the thing. Finally, he comes up with this kind of barbaric sounding Portuguese. My Portuguese accent, as Luis can tell me, stinks. Conscientização. I can't do the nasal thing well enough. Conscientization is the way it's usually translated. And what is Freire getting at when he brings up that category? He says, in talking to the poor people who simply accept the status quo as what is real and what is appropriate and what ought to be. And he said, when I raise people's consciences or try to reach people's consciences, I make them aware of the oppression and the violence that pervades their lives, that situates them where they are. Well, that's really important for poor people, but I think it's also important for us. What oppresses us? What oppresses us? What insinuates himself into our consciousness where we radically skew our vision of what the world is or what it's supposed to be? I think it's a lifelong process. It does not happen overnight. It requires persistent and detailed awareness of who I am and where I fit into the world and what kind of world God calls me to help create, to be a light of revelation to the Gentiles.